having suffered a recent bear market, Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency complex is back on the upswing. Here with us today to talk about developments in the blockchain space is Omar Bam, one of the most compelling voices in the virtual currency investment sector. Mr. Bam operates the Cryptos News YouTube channel, which has over 120,000 subscribers. And with recent geopolitical developments sending an unexpected bearish wave in the equity markets, now is an ideal time to consider Bitcoin. Why? Contrary to other safe haven assets, Bitcoin features only a small correlation to traditional benchmarks like gold, stocks, and real estate. We've laid out a critical guideline for blockchain success, which you can find at crushthestreet.com/crypto. When one tweet can lose trillions of dollars, the system is where you don't want to be. Once again, please go to crushthestreet.com/crypto. So without any more delays, here's Omar Bam.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into crushthestreet.com. I'm Kenneth Amanduri, and I'm joined by a friend, someone who has just, you know, probably the coolest guy in the cryptocurrency community. His name is Omar Bam. He's of Cryptos News. You can find him on YouTube. Just type it in, and he'll come right up to the top. He's got one of the best reputations in the community. And somebody who, if you want to know what's going on in crypto at almost any point in time, you know, something just comes out on the news feed and boom, you know, go on to Omar's channel and you can get some really, really unbiased commentary on what is going on. Really friendly place to be in the crypto community. So Omar, without any further ado, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me.
Thank you so much, Kenneth. You know, I've mentioned it before. I've been on your channel, luckily, I think twice. And thank you for having me again. It's been super exciting to watch you get into cryptocurrency and blockchain in a bigger way, because I was watching your channel before I even started mine in 2016. And I really love the guests that you have on. I've been honored to actually meet you in person. And it's still kind of trippy to me to hear your voice, you know, when I just listen to your videos and your excellent, well thought out questions that you pose that are relevant, I think, to people listening in. So I know it's the same thing for me when I tune into your channel, when I kind of want to get a nice scope of what's happening, economics, finance, across a macro and micro sense. I really enjoy your channel. So thanks for having me back, Kenneth.
Well, I appreciate that. And the feeling's mutual. Omar, before we get into crypto, I mean, I think this will really lead into the crypto discussion, but as it pertains to kind of what's going on this week in the markets, in the economy, the stock market as a whole, interestingly, Trump tweeted this week and he really rocked the markets. I mean, this was an estimate prior to today's plunge, so it's down even lower now. He tweeted about Chinese tariffs and he threw off the market by $1.3 trillion, as someone did the math, it's like $13 billion a word he impacted the stock market by. And you know, what's your thoughts basically on the weakness of the stock market, you know, with just a tweet and kind of where we're at and the stability of the system that we're in?
I would say it's very political for sure. I mean, okay, so the Fed is supposed to be separate from politics, from the politicians. They're not supposed to be influencing each other really in any sort of way. The Fed's main job is to keep interest rates at a level where we have a healthy growing economy and we have interest rates that aren't, you know, stifling things, and we have healthy growth without inflation. And so that's supposed to be their primary mandate, but it becomes extremely difficult to do that when they've gotten interest rates this low. And now they're talking about negative interest rates. I'm sure you saw that on the IMF blog, which is very new, uncharted territory. And we have Janet Yellen, the ex-Fed chairman, talking about how we could make that happen and how that would be feasible and good. And it's interesting because she's also talking about trying to buy up stocks and changing laws to allow them to be able to do their job better, as they say. But it's like trying to build on an unstable foundation, which is what all of this has been based on, because all of this is an experiment. Humans haven't had money. We've had money, but we've evolved it. We found new ways to do it. First, it was gold, then it was receipts of gold and cash, then it was cash and was credit cards, checks and all of this. And now we're moving into this brand new digital world, which it seems that's kind of where they want to take us, because they would be able to surveil every transaction and they would be able to manipulate interest rates with more clear data. So I don't know if you also saw Joseph Stiglitz came on and talk about how unhealthy cryptocurrencies are because they make things less transparent and that we should shut down the cryptocurrencies and have a digital dollar. But it's still a digital dollar that's based off of debts that are in countries all around the world, trillions and trillions of dollars. A lot of the bonds aren't even held with debts to the U.S. government aren't even held by U.S. citizens or pensions. They're held by overseas countries, maybe even China, who don't have our, you know, they have their own interests, let's say that. At the end of the day, it's war. And economic war is one of the, it's actually what starts most wars. So it's Trump trying to be a businessman, but it's a tough world that he's jumping into. He's jumping into legacies and of families and money and wealth that has been controlling things, and they want their wealth to grow. It's not that necessarily they want to see other people suffer, but they want more power. They want to have clout. So really it's about clout here. We have, who knows why Trump is actually tweeting what he's tweeting. It seems more and more he's trying to get the support of people above all, because that's what's going to get him elected. He wants to keep the stock market good. He wants all these corporations who've had access to cheap and easy money, lower taxes during his reign, to be happy with him and vote him back in with their media clout. But I really do think it's at the behest of a lot of people, because they miss a lot of economic data. They don't talk about how baby boomers are retiring, and you are. Well, I saw your recent newsletter, how baby boomers are retiring at huge levels. It's actually growing every single year until, I believe, 2027, when we reach that peak. We actually climb every single year. Then we still have huge millions and millions of baby boomers, which was the biggest generation of Americans ever born, retiring and asking for their pension plans back. You know, they worked their entire life. Our parents, our grandparents worked their entire life to build something so they could enjoy their life afterwards. But, you know, I've always been a big proponent of living life in that moment, you know, finding ways to enjoy your life right now, not living for the future. And this is a good example of the scam that these people have been fed, working 9-to-5 jobs and tuning in on the weekends or in the mornings to listen to CNBC and Fox, who aren't going to share the data about how pensions are being drained because baby boomers are retiring. And this is also stocks, also IRAs, Roth IRAs, whatever you want to name it. But people are selling bonds, they're selling stocks. And it's going to escalate. It's going to escalate as people begin to fear that their retirement money isn't going to be there for, you know, for even half the time that they had supposed. So if they had planned to retire for a period of 20 years, if the stock market gets cut in half, because more and more baby boomers are retiring, that's just one factor which could easily exponentially climb down as other people are like, oh, I'm scared. The bot algorithms that control everything. Trust me, this is almost out of the hands of the Federal Reserve, who we already know has a floor where they actually buy stocks, the Federal Reserve, already. So I don't even know why Janet Yellen is saying what she's saying. They're there to keep things afloat. We have the stock plunge protection team, and we have Wall Street. We have personal traders. There's so, and countries that are running trading algorithms, bots that are just looking at charts. And when things start to turn for the negative, they're going to want to keep their money before this. It's basically a Ponzi. The last person to get their money out doesn't get any money. And so it stinks. It scares me for the baby boomers, and people want to find where they can protect themselves if they're looking for this information. So to me, cryptocurrencies have been something that's very uncorrelated to even gold, which is nice, to gold, silver, precious metals. It's uncorrelated to bonds, stocks, real estate in many ways. It's got correlations now, but we've seen research done that the correlation is actually really, really low, even to this very day, despite what you might hear. So to me, it presents a fantastic opportunity to find somewhere else, because we need to be looking in many places to protect our wealth.
So with 70% of the wealth held by baby boomers and these people going into their retirement years, who's going to be left to buy the stocks that are there, right, in Wall Street. And, you know, we'll see what the Fed starts trying to do going forward, because they might be the buyer of last resort until, you know, really the new generation cycles through, right? I mean, Harry Dent talks about it. I mean, you know, decades down the road, where it's going to really have to cycle through for, like, you know, the millennials to really recover, and these other generations that are following to recover from what is to come. So really interesting stuff here.
Yeah. Even Ray Dalio had a great video about that. People should check out, called How the Economic Machine Works. I don't know if you've seen that. And it goes through that. It's awesome. It's a 30-minute special that he did on YouTube. It's free now. I heard about it in his book. He actually still works as a consultant for the biggest hedge fund basically the world has ever known. And he started it himself. It's called Bridgewater Associates. And he talks about that video in his book. I believe he made it in 2007, 2017. I'm not sure. But it really goes into how we have these cycles. And so most of us in our lifetimes have, it's almost like Game of Thrones, which is a hot topic. It's like, I just started watching it yesterday with my girlfriend, but they talk about how winter is coming. And so people who haven't seen winter, because winter only comes every like generations, so people who've been alive and they haven't seen winter are like, no, that's a myth. The Frostwalkers, a myth. That's a joke. Don't believe that nonsense from those old people and those weird texts. But it's a good sign of how we have it. It's a good example of how we have these long-term market cycles. You have these short-term cycles in between, and then you have this just elevator down. And then there'll be opportunities to get back into these markets. But and they're generally shorter. Bear markets are shorter, even I would say in the long-term cycle, they are shorter. But it's going to be extremely painful really quick, and it's going to turn the world upside down when you see money moving around so quickly. And it's opportunities for people to build their wealth. That's how some families actually, how they've amassed huge amounts of wealth is shorting at the right time. Or being positioned in the right place because I've done the research when the champagne was still flowing, which I would say still is right now, except unless you're a millennial with student debt up the yin yang and we don't have money to invest. I was watching a video about a kid saying, you know, she made the bad decision to get her master's degree, dropped out after 2 years and still has $50,000 in debt. She said, I wish I didn't have to spend she spends more, $2,000 a month, putting that towards my loan so that I can be debt free by 2030. And I could have that money to invest in the stock market. And I'm just thinking the stock market, oh man, you're getting slammed from all sides, you know?
The odds are strongly against the millennial generation. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, we're stuck with conventional wisdom in so many instances of, you know, just go to college, right? You know what? And the thing is a lot of this stuff really worked out for the baby boomer generation, right? Going to college, getting a job, experiencing the 90s, you know, going into the 2000s, they did well. They were able to buy homes and, you know, the system worked for them. The stock market did phenomenal, right? From the 80s up until now. So it's like, you know, we're being taught by the prior generation on what works in an economic situation that is rapidly changing. I mean, let's not even start talking about AI and all these other things that are going to rapidly change things quicker than, you know, we have ever experienced at any other time in history. So 100%. But I do want to go into crypto now. I mean, we're hitting $6,000 Bitcoin here. Bitcoin as the benchmark, I mean, up roughly 100% from where it bottomed out at. I mean, this is pretty significant. And, you know, I'm just curious from your perspective, from where you are in your position, your channel, the people you speak to, the sentiment. I mean, where are we right now in the crypto community space?
I would say we've turned a lot more bullish for sure, because we've had several important technical indicators that people were looking for cross. So namely the 50-day exponential moving average crossing over the 200-day exponential moving average, which was almost an immediate shift for people from a bearish mode to at least an accumulation mode. But honestly, when I talk to people who've been in the space for a long time, they couldn't be more happy to be accumulating, because we kind of know that there's a bull market. If not, it's already happening, because like you said, 2019, Bitcoin's up almost about 100%. It's already broken $6,000 just last night. And so I would say it's definitely a bullish phase. And to me, it's really interesting because we've had some terrible news recently. And it hasn't shocked the market to any crazy degree. We had a lot of drama around Bitfinex and Tether. They're owned by this company called iFinex. And them being one of the oldest exchange, a lot of volume, and them being in trouble for apparently moving around $850 million, loaning each other $850 million to keep an exchange solvent, the New York Attorney General looking into that. And for me, they personally been, and I've been saying this for years, a boogeyman under the closet. You know, if we have a bull market, it, to me, that would be one of the big enders. That would be, if they went down, if they got shut down, I think that would really shock the community. But we got news that they're being investigated, and there's all sorts of evidence to prove that the malfeasance is true. And we dropped off, I don't know, 2% for Bitcoin, 1.87% overnight. That's nothing. So that's one thing. And then up we go again. We just broke 6,000 after Binance, the biggest exchange by volume right now. They have suffered a huge loss of 2% of all the Bitcoin that they hold. They lost about $40 million worth of Bitcoin through API keys, 2FA theft being stolen, and information they haven't shared yet about user accounts that could be also compromised. And that's 2% of about $2.1 billion, I believe, that they have in dollars, which is quite a lot. So it's not insane for them. But we had afterwards talks about how there was a discussion done between the CEO of Binance, CZ, him talking to the community and discussing the possibility to reorganize the Bitcoin blockchain so that miners could. It's kind of like a fork of the Bitcoin blockchain. So you take a different history of the blockchain going forward. You kind of incentivize the people who are validating transactions, the miners, to want to exclude the hack from the history of Bitcoin and actually get rewarded the Bitcoin that was stolen by finding out the addresses that went to, and getting rewarded a share of that. So rather than giving the money back to Binance, giving it to the miners. But so that, even to discuss that is insane. I mean, that should be huge drama. Okay, so the biggest exchange by volume wants to reorganize the Bitcoin blockchain by themselves. They want to rally the community. By the way, this is taken as a hostile attack by most of the Bitcoin maximalists, most of the community. I haven't seen many people who are like, oh, that's cool. Because obviously that's kind of a marketing play, which is how you've seen so many companies kind of come up. It's like, it's almost, and to me, it's almost like megalomania. Don't get me wrong. It's almost like megalomaniac to be like, oh, I can reorganize the Bitcoin blockchain. Luckily, CZ said, no, that was just a discussion that was brought up by another user on Twitter. We weren't actually considering that. That would take away from Bitcoin's anti-resistant structure where one user can't control everything. So no, we're actually not going to be doing that. But despite all of that happening, possibility of reorganizing a blockchain, Binance going down, Facebook just within the last 24 hours deciding that they are going to be lifting bans on cryptocurrency advertisements, them building their own coin, Fidelity Investment Trusts, getting ready for their $7.1 trillion worth of managed assets to get exposure to Bitcoin trading through the new platform that they're opening up. But they've already been running in a kind of private beta for institutional investors. It has only ramped up. You know, you think more companies would have gone away, big companies, and lost interest in cryptocurrency and blockchain technology during the bear market, but they've stood fast, and many of them have grown their team, including Facebook as well, launching their Project Libra, which we now know is a stable coin that's going to be integrated into WhatsApp and possibly even a regular cryptocurrency as well, as they open up digital payments on their own system and tried to usurp MasterCard and Visa. So interestingly, MasterCard and Visa are partners with Facebook, but Facebook is threatening to destroy their entire business model by having merchants accept Facebook stablecoin for a 0% fee versus the huge fees that, well, they go huge over time, that MasterCard, Visa, American Express, and other credit card providers charge these merchants per transaction. So It's this whole ecosystem is changing in so many ways. And yes, AI playing such a role in all this. I know we can't get into it, but I guess my concern is that we have about 10 years to even enjoy crypto and digital assets as humans before, I don't know, either AI takes over and destroys everything, or and we're left kind of irrelevant, or most of us are jobless and the wealth gap grows to where those who own the robots until the robots take over. I know it sounds like sci-fi crazy, but you have experts like Michio Kaku who talk about the singularity. You have Elon Musk, who this is his greatest fear, AI taking over. Ray Kurzweil, just brilliant thinkers who think about what's happening in the future. And while I was someone who's, and I still remain very excited about its potential, while we have 5G antennas all around us springing up, they're already here in LA, I hear, and all the traffic lights, there's already 5G systems for the new cell phone networks already in all of the traffic lights in LA, because I think the ex-mayor of Los Angeles was working for the FTC. He's one of the tops of the FTC. So so despite health risks some expect from like radiation and all of that, besides all of that, just mass surveillance, having internet on all around us at all times and devices with increasingly cheaper chips built into them. So it's cheap to put chips and everything that are surveilling us, turning us into a surveillance state, not unlike China, where I think there's like 22 million cameras observing people at all times. So that to me is scary after reading 1984, just actually last year, over this last year, reading 1984 in the Orwellian state. And it's freaky how close to right he might have been.
It is crazy. And I have a lot of thoughts on AI, but I'm gonna hold my comments back for now. Omar, so you mentioned Binance, the hack. I was reading a Bloomberg article, and of course, Bloomberg's a more conventional wisdom, mainstream news source. And the comments, it was like, oh, Bitcoin's a scam. See, I told you, right? You know, I mean, this look what happened here. And of course, you know, so many people are commenting on it now. You know, Warren Buffett, of course, called it a gambling device. And, you know, I was kind of trying to like step back and like, you know, think clearly and not just go on the offensive. But I'm like thinking, okay, he's the third richest man on the earth. I mean, you know, the guy doesn't care what anybody thinks, right? You know, he's going to say what he wants. It doesn't matter, right? he's secure enough in what he's done in life, and he doesn't need cryptocurrency. But I guess I could see where he's coming from to the degree that it's new, it's unknown. But I feel like the $6,000 Bitcoin is coming back. It's legitimizing crypto once again. I mean, the biggest people in the world are talking about it, the biggest news sites. It didn't go away. I think if we were at $1,000 Bitcoin right now, obviously it would still be a depression in the space, but I mean, it would really be go further and further into the back of the minds of the mainstream economy. Whereas, you know, sure, we had a pretty significant downturn in 2018, but it's coming back. It didn't go too far back in the minds of people, and the fundamentals are still building out. So I know I said a lot there. I'm just going to pass the floor back to you.
Sure. Yeah, I just had some thoughts. I don't remember the exact question. You know, I'm thinking about...
No question.
About,
just
awesome.
Comments.
Just conversation. Yeah, I'm thinking about, just while you're speaking there, one thought that crossed my mind there is how most people who are into cryptocurrency tend to be between the ages of 24 and 35. And I think you can see that on YouTube analytics yourself. I'm not sure how specific your audience is to crypto, but at this point in time, but definitely that's what I've seen. It's growing now because obviously we're getting older. So I think it's actually 24 to 44 because there are about 10-year ranges that they group these together, these analytics. But we also know that, and I get the New York Times, I think it's $80 per month to get the New York Times. It couldn't have been that price probably 20 years ago when everyone was reading newspaper. So I'm remembering how less people are reading things in physically and they're moving to the digital realm. And who understands the digital realm than people who grew up in the digital realm, like millennials. And so these newspaper sites are more and more transitioning to publishing their content online. And the people who read the content online tend to be millennials. We share this stuff on Twitter. This stuff goes viral on Facebook. So there's money to be made from advertising. And as the price climbs, they're going to be more and more interested in sharing that. And that's also going to play a big role in people finding crypto or getting interested again in crypto. What's interesting to me is that when the bear market has happened, I've lost a lot of viewership as well on my channel from 25,000 views plus per video, 30,000 views plus per on my daily video, to about 5,000 views per day on my videos at the, you could call the bottom of the bear market around $3,000, let's say that, or the last time we saw bottom. And it's been climbing again. It's been climbing, especially on days that certain news happens. It lets me know that people are still tapped in. They're not necessarily watching videos every single day, but they are paying attention. And that was not the case in 2016 when I started doing videos, or even when I was trying to find information on cryptocurrency in 2015. There was none of this at all. There were 300 people at Bitcoin conferences, and we grew to about 4,000 people in Miami, where I hung out with you for a bit in 2017 at the North American Bitcoin Conference. 4,500, I think, actually. And those numbers haven't dropped off. I've been to conferences here in LA. I've been attending many things during the bear market. And it's just matured, I guess you could say. It's matured from, and I guess you could call it maturity, less anonymous to more, this is who I am. I'm a company and I'm trying to raise funds because we are doing something legit. We are aware that the SEC is going after companies. We are aware of the risks involved. We have lawyers, but we're seeing the space mature from regulatory fronts. The SEC has put out a new framework for what could be a security, which was a big scare for a lot of companies that don't want to be selling a security. We're moving to a lot more equity-based companies as well. We're raising money for a product that's going to help make crypto easier for people to use. And we have so many institutions building up custody programs. Because, for example, so if I'm going to be allowing on my brokerage stock trading, I cannot be holding the stocks myself. There has to be a separate company that does surveillance, as a separate company that does execution of the trades, as there has to be a separate company that does custody of the stock or whatever asset we're talking about. So one major thing crypto has been lacking is custody solutions, where the crypto is kept safe so we don't have like what happened with Binance occur. Instead, you have multi-sig wallets. You need to sign a transaction with various parties around the world. And there might be time locks on when Bitcoin can be drawn, for example. It can't be withdrawn this huge amount until 48 hours have passed, and you have all these signatures from the various parties. So these kinds of improvements have been needed for sure, especially for institutions who have to abide by regulations. And it's happening. BitGo, one of the big wallets, has been building out custody solutions. Like I mentioned, Fidelity is building that out. Coinbase custody is another big one. So this is definitely happening as we mature to a new point where you can get these ETFs and bigger futures products built out for crypto, which is going to create demand. Just realistically, it's going to create demand, especially as the stock market has issues, man. It just, as it has these issues and people are looking for a safe haven, and gold is not doing what the gold, and I have gold, you know, I have silver. I'll mention that again, but you know, it's not doing anything. Yeah, I'll keep it there because I want to be diversified and as another safe hedge, and it's a physical asset and all of that. But it's not doing what it needs to do. I think Bitcoin, especially as you see these funds that are already up about 100% to the year, and it's going to look like 20,000% again, like we saw in 2017 for some of these, and more of them exponentially as more and more funds start, and the weaker ones die away because they got in at inopportune times, like at the top of a market, it's going to draw more people, more wealth, more money. I think what's interesting also that we don't think about very much is that you can divide crypto into small pieces. So while Bitcoin might be $20,000, you can buy a piece of a Bitcoin. You can buy 0.0001 Bitcoin for $5. So it opens up the doors for people to invest in Bitcoin where they might not be able to buy a fraction of an Amazon stock or a Berkshire Hathaway stock. They have to buy a whole stock. They don't necessarily get a piece of it. So that's also going to make it easier for the retail person to get into crypto as well. So that's part of what fuels the bull run, besides just the economics built into Bitcoin's halving, which is coming up next year. And we do see runs up leading into and after the halving. Usually it actually happens in a bigger way after the halving, maybe like a month or two afterwards. So I think it's going to be super interesting for the people who are getting in now, which is why, you know, I continue to talk about this, where many have just lost interest as well. At least they've kept it at arm's length away. I think it's important to let people know at the most opportune times. And so staying tapped in is important to that. And I think this is still a crazy opportunity, because we're not even in a bull run for me until Bitcoin passes $20,000. Because regardless of all technicals, that's when people who are in the red and will be in the red, you know, you put $100 in when Bitcoin was 20 bucks, and when Bitcoin was $20,000, you put $100 in. Bitcoin is 5,000, let's say now, actually it's 6,000. You still only have, what is it, 60 bucks, 50 bucks? You're way down. And until it hits that point where you're back in the black, I don't think you're going to get super excited to put money in, but that's going to be a real big driver. And I wait for the media news then, but you want to be in, I would say, before that, at least in a small way. You know, I'm not giving financial advice here. I'm not saying throw all your money into it. I'm a big fan of diversifying. But I think you're silly, especially if you're an institution, to really do an injustice to your investors to not take a serious look at this. Or even Warren Buffett, right? Like, there are problems with Bitcoin, but as I mentioned, they're being solved every single day by more and more people who are looking at all the facets of it. Professionals who have done great and not scammy work when it comes to marketing, or when it comes to development, or when it comes to being an entrepreneur. Serious people like Jack, who built out Twitter and Cash App, who is now accepting Bitcoin. We have so many more serious people who are studied and know what they're doing and are getting involved. And by just saying, you know, Bitcoin is messed up, you're not talking about the solutions. You need to look at both sides here, and there are solutions that are happening every day. There are problems, and they're being worked on.
Omar, I want to talk about maybe your first love, Ethereum. You can correct me if I miscalculated that or not. But where are we with Ethereum? And I think, I feel like a lot has shaken out. You know, this bear market has really consolidated things. I think it's let people, you know, appreciate Bitcoin for what it is, especially as the volatility in many of the other currencies, and not necessarily, you know, Ethereum, but just like everything else that was coming out, like, oh, this is the next big thing, this is the next big thing. And then when it's all said and done, you know, really the best ones, you know, surfaced. And that's what people paid attention to. And I think that was probably really good for Bitcoin and Ethereum to go through that and to experience that resilience and to solidify itself as the dominators as we go forward. I think a lot of people are going to remember this and say, hey, you know, don't forget who are the safe havens in this space, even as we see other ones emerge. Anyways, I'm saying a lot in these questions. But, you know, I'd like to get your thoughts maybe on that. And also, you know, Ethereum, you know, where are you with that?
Sure. Well, actually, my first love was Bitcoin for sure, because I was just looking for somewhere to diversify. And that's the first one I found. Some people have found new coins. They have found crypto through new coins. They've been burned on BitConnect, which is the first coin they found. And they thought that was crypto, but nope. And so they were vitriolic for a while, and they looked into it a little bit further a few months later. And they're like, oh, no, I was wrong. And, you know, I respect people who owned up to that. But many of us find our journey into crypto through different ways, and especially now. But back then, it was Bitcoin in 2015. Actually, I started using it in 2012, but I just thought it was silly. It was slow. I wasn't. It took a long time to get confirmations. But in 2016, someone mentioned Ethereum to me, a buddy of mine, and I ignored it. I said, no, Bitcoin, you know, I was a maximalist. Why would I look at anything else? There's all these coins that are getting delisted off of exchanges. I would go on Poloniex, and there were coins being delisted all the time because they just couldn't keep up with Bitcoin. And so I was definitely a maximalist. And then the second time I heard about it, I decided to look into it. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be ignorant. It was just one of those days. And I'm going to go ahead and look into this and read everything about it. And what I found was fascinating, which is Turing complete language blockchain. It was the first time that we could build code that was immutable, that we could, just like with Bitcoin, where the transactions aren't stored on just one computer. Now we can build programs that are not stored on just one central server. they're stored on every single computer that's running an Ethereum node, just like a Bitcoin mining node. And so you have these applications that cannot be shut down, and the opportunity to build out applications that cannot be censored. So as somebody, as a big freedom fighter and a big person for free speech and the First Amendment, and somebody who had been disappointed with what I've learned about the economy, Ethereum was amazing for the opportunity to be able to build products that will give us freedom in the future. So once I got into that, I got into Ethereum in a big way, began mining it. Where we're at right now is that, you know, when Ethereum, when I first heard about Ethereum, it was just transitioning from its first phase, which was called Frontier. There are four phases for Ethereum's holy grail, right? The Valhalla of Ethereum, which is now known as Ethereum 2.0, but back then it was just Ethereum, or the last phase of the fourth called Casper. It was called Serenity, which features Casper technology. So you have Frontier, and I got in when it was moving into Homestead, which was still beta. Now we're in Metropolis, which has been broken up into several phases, into two phases. And then we're going to move into Casper, or Ethereum 2.0. So where we're at with Ethereum right now is that back then we were supposed to launch Casper actually by November. I think I got into it in February, and that obviously didn't happen. It's been years. We've realized that what's normal with development has also happened with crypto, which is it takes, you know, at least 2 years before you can see serious work happening. But we've realized there's a lot of, it's complicated. How do you move a blockchain that's storing billions and billions of dollars, that's grown exponentially? How do you upgrade that? How do you change the engine on a train while it's moving? And there are so many brilliant people who have been doing work on how to make sure that happens so people don't lose money. And so for one, I'm happy that there have been delays and there have been changes to how this is all going to play out, because that means that we're thinking about it. We want to do this in the best way and build out a train that will be able to run for years into the future. So right now on June 30th, today is May 9th, on June 30th, so in about a month, the final specifications of the final phase of Ethereum, moving into Ethereum 2.0, are going to be built out. So you can think of that as a blueprint. So the blueprint for the architects are finishing with a blueprint for the construction workers to build out, aka the developers of the code. So that's going to be finalized on June 30th. That's the estimation. And then from there, it's just crunching numbers. All the serious research is going to be finished, and it's going to be launching in three phases. I don't know how technical we can get here. I don't want to get too technical. There are three phases. So there's phase 0, 1, and 2. Phase 0 already launched the test network, so that's already going. Then you'll be able to lock up 32 Ether once phase 0 launches out of test network into the main network. So you can lock up Ether, 32 Ether is the estimations now, and run a node for Ether. And you get rewarded, I believe, it's going to be 10% per year as of the last discussions, just for keeping your Ether there. So that's going to lower the availability and the liquidity actually on exchanges. So that actually should increase the price, because there's less out there being sold. There have been decreases in the inflation rate of Ether. So it's actually on par with Bitcoin, and it's actually expected to go into negative inflation almost. If you think about all the different factors that have to do with something implemented called rent. So they're actually going to be charging rent for smart contracts to be stored. So you have to pay Ether to keep your smart contracts there. So that's going to be interesting. It's going to burn Ether. Talked about burning gas, so that transaction fees paid in Ether being locked up. I mean, from a bullish point, from an investor standpoint, it presents a wonderful opportunity for the price to climb. Now, there are competitors. That's the thing. There are many competitors for Ethereum. So before Ethereum launches 2.0, which is when you can finally withdraw the stake, so you've staked 32 Ether, you've amassed 10% per year, it's expected, but it'll take about until the year 2022. Maybe 2021 before you'll be able to withdraw the Ether you're staking now. So you have to be aware of that risk. If you're going to be running a staking node, you won't be able to withdraw your Ether right away. So you'll basically be having to hope that Ethereum 2.0 launches just fine, and that you can withdraw your Ether and you won't have access to that capital in the meantime. So that's one thing you should be aware of. Plus there are other projects like EOS that allow you to basically send transactions without having to pay, by just staking some EOS and keeping that locked up. And you can withdraw that within by unstaking it within a 24-hour period, and that's growing huge amounts. I think the top 40 dApps, decentralized applications, are built on EOS. Then you have Tron competing. I don't know enough technically about Tron, but to speak too much on that. Tezos, another one people are very excited about. But there's a lot of competition in this space. I think it's healthy. Where I'm someone that was in, you could say, an extreme Ethereum bull, where Ethereum was like the only thing back in 2016, 2017 that I saw serious. There are a lot of serious projects out there right now. And so I'm excited actually about EOS and Ethereum still. I'm excited. And one thing I forgot to mention, Kenneth, is that Ethereum was the first major blockchain protocol built after Bitcoin. So while Bitcoin was the first one that did anything innovative, there were a lot of forks of Bitcoin, things that did something to a smaller degree. The most evolutionary thing after Bitcoin was definitely Ethereum because of smart contracts. And so you have a lot of ex-Bitcoin hodlers, people who had amassed wealth in Bitcoin and still do to this very day, who also have a stake in Ethereum. They want to see Ethereum do well. So there's a lot of human capital and community from Bitcoin and early crypto believers that are in Ethereum. Some of the most brilliant minds are in Ethereum. So that's going to be the most difficult thing, I would say, to pass, is the trust in Ethereum. And something that's been around longer than, and that will always be the case, right? It's always going to be the oldest smart contract platform. It's going to be difficult to get a bigger community unless Ethereum really does a misstep, you know? I'll leave it at that. I know they're long answers. I'm sorry.
No, sorry. I was unmuting my microphone. Okay. No, that's powerful, man. And yeah, lots to be said about that. And, you know, we continue to, you know, learn more and more about, you know, the importance of first mover advantage and just this balance of having to do things right so we don't destroy everything that's happened in the past. I mean, we've seen that happen in the past with, you know, some of the Ethereum upgrades and whatnot. But, you know, things are moving forward, and it's a balance of just trusting the smartest people in the world. And, you know, nothing's guaranteed, but, you know, it's always about stacking the odds in your favor and anticipating what is to come, mm-hmm. which I think is really exciting about this whole thing. And I don't know what I was thinking about my timeline and as terms of, you know, obviously when you got introduced and, you know, became acquainted with the cryptocurrency space, but I know that, you know, Ethereum was a big game changer for you. And so that's all I meant by that.
Oh no, I totally get it. No, it definitely was. It got me way more excited in a way than Bitcoin when I found it. So, and I've shared that enthusiasm here before. You know, you mentioned stacking odds in your favor, just a quick side note there, which is so contrary to Warren Buffett's statement about Bitcoin being, or crypto being, a gambling device, because when I go to the slot machine, there's no way I can stack that in my favor. But if you do diligence here, if you really research so much technically, economically, with different coins or projects or even companies, if you're just looking for equity, you can stack the odds in your favor. So such a good point there. And I would say it's proportional to the effort you put in, you get out with crypto.
Absolutely. Omar, I want to thank you so much for your time here. You've blessed us with just your wisdom, your knowledge in the crypto space. And we really appreciate it. And what a timely time to be doing this. I mean, I'm optimistic that we're getting out of the brutality of the bear market. We'll be interesting to see how things going forward here. If the market does do what it does and, you know, washes and rinses us all here by going back to 4,000 or 3,500. I mean, I wouldn't put it by it, but I like the fundamentals that we're seeing here in the space. It's optimistic, and we're getting on mainstream news outlets, and I think it couldn't be more positive. So if you would just share some closing thoughts here, if people want to learn more about crypto's news and what you do, obviously mention that here, and you know what people can find if they join your communities. I know you have a lot of different communities and groups off across different platforms, so please share all of those things.
Sure. If you've not followed crypto for whatever reason in too much detail, but you're aware of the issues and you're following obviously Kenneth's channel, And if you haven't, please subscribe to his channel right now. If you just found this through crypto somehow, because I think an important first step is realizing the issues when it comes to stocks, and you look at pension plans and look at all of this and what's happening and the market cycle, watch how the economic machine works. It's worth the 30 minutes by Ray Dalio on YouTube. It's free. And first realize the problems there and then look into crypto, you know, take things one step at a time. But it's fascinating. Crypto is just growing every day. The news, it's difficult to keep up, but I try to do the news every single day. So you can subscribe to my channel. I try to do it Monday through Friday, unless something comes up. And I cover most of the major topics. They're lengthy videos, and I think they're more catered to a more mature audience because they're not 3-minute quick snap videos. I really try to give some experience from my own history. So while I try to remain objective, as you mentioned, definitely there's going to be my own personal experience and tidbits there. And I try to make that clear when that's just my opinion, whenever that does happen. But my goal is to give people freedom above all, whether that's through crypto or something else. If crypto really was a scam to me, let's call it that, or a Ponzi or a pyramid, and I really think it had a potential to hurt more people at this point than help people, I wouldn't be talking about it, because my goal is really just to help people and to create awareness about what's happening. And there are so few people involved. So you can check me out on YouTube, Crypto, CRYPT0. I have a site, cryptosnews.com, with that same zero instead of the letter at the end of crypto. I have Twitter. I'm now on iTunes. That's pretty cool. I just rip my videos for people who don't want to waste data, spend data. That's free as well on iTunes or SoundCloud. I've started a new thing. I have crypto crossword puzzles as well for my Patreon subscribers. They can pitch in as little as $1 a month or whatever, but I just wanted to give something back to them. So I'm now beginning every single month to take some major topics from the news, create crossword puzzles, and just find a new way to keep people both educated, entertained, and informed about what's happening that month, and rewarded possibly, you know, with some fun, since I've been subscribing to the New York Times, which, by the way, is so biased. I'm going to unsubscribe. anyway, yeah, I think it's important to have objective forums for truth. I started a new Reddit channel as well, because there's so much censorship on Reddit, on social media. I think we need to have a place where you can talk about whatever and debate and argue with people and not worry about your comment being deleted or the state of where crypto's at right now being in one specific perspective, as we see with certain cryptocurrency subreddits, which are like message boards. So it's called Cryptos News, simple again there on Reddit. So if you have anything to share, news articles, people won't let you share somewhere else. You're a new YouTube channel or content creator who wants to share some thoughts, share that there, and we'll be happy to have you. We've grown about 460 members in like a week. So that's super amazing to see people want that truth. So I hope you guys join me. I'm excited to have you. Thank you for having me, Kenneth. You are such an amazing voice in the space, and I love your spirit. And congratulations on the third kid, man.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate those kind words. That. And I appreciate you coming on Crush the Street. So you're always welcome here. Thank you, Omar, for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kenneth. Take care, man.